You're with RN's Books and Arts, where we're celebrating the work of Jane Austen on this, the 200th anniversary of her death. I'm Sarah Kanoski. We've been asking you over the last few weeks to nominate your favourite Austen adaptations, and most of you have chosen film and TV versions from the last few decades. But pop culture adaptations and imaginings of Jane Austen have a much longer history than that. This is what Devani Losa reveals in her new book, The Making of Jane Austen. Devani, you've mentioned the fact that Austen as an individual wasn't known in her lifetime. Who had a role in making the author that we know, in creating the literary persona of Jane Austen?
I've had such fun writing this book, looking at the ways that many popular artists and dramatists, directors, actors reinterpreted Austen and brought her before large audiences way before we all fell in love with Colin Firth and that wet white shirt in 1995. And the ones that I've been most taken with recently are the dramatists and the actors. And there is, in fact, a Hot Darcy, who's a precursor to Colin Firth and even to Laurence Olivier in that 1940 film, and his name is also Colin. Keith Johnston was an Englishman who was a Broadway hit in the 1935 Helen Jerome dramatization of Pride and Prejudice. So that's one example of a hot Darcy named Colin who was before hundreds of thousands in audiences, almost a century ago now.
And so that's quite a lag, though, from the time that she was published to the time that Austen novels make it onto the stage.
Sure. And I think if we go back to her earlier history after she died, the 1820s were a kind of low point for her. People may still have been reading her, but the books were not widely available in print. In 1833, they were republished with illustrations in England for the first time. And that was another watershed moment in her early afterlife that made her celebrity possible.
What sort of illustrations accompanied those early publications of her novels?
Yes, and I talk about this in a chapter where I've identified for the first time who this illustrator was. His name was Ferdinand Pickering, and he did 10 designs for all of Austen's novels when they were republished in the 1830s, and he did them in a really fascinating way. They were they were definitely female-focused, but very gothic and sensational, and I think made her seem a different kind of author to early Victorian readers.
Well, the vision of her as an author was something her family participated in too, didn't they, in early sort of biographical sketches of Austen?
Yes, her brother Henry was the first to identify her publicly as the author of her novels, and that was in 1818 when he brought out a biographical preface that was attached to Northanger Abbey and Persuasion. He revised that in the 1830s illustrated editions I was just mentioning, and then it was until 1870 when the first long-form biography of Austen came out, published by her nephew, James Edward Austen Leigh. So all of these family members were involved in creating her as an object of interest, and they tended to prettify her, soften her, make her seem a little less witty and snarky, I think, than many of us imagine her today.
A sweeter Aunt Jane than we have an image of. Well, let's fast forward 200 years, because Austen and her books have, of course, given birth to a whole raft of spin-offs, adaptations and tributes. Here's a taste of some screen versions. I wonder how many you can pick.
Miss Austen, I understand you will be favouring us with a reading.
Novels. Being poor, insipid things, read by mere women. Even, God forbid, written by mere women.
I see. We are talking of your reading.
As if the writing of women did not display the greatest powers of mind, knowledge of human nature, the liveliest effusions of wit and humour, and the best chosen language imaginable.
You haven't said which book you want to be responsible for.
Maybe Persuasion, because I'm increasingly drawn to its elegiac tone.
Don't think I'm doing the book club.
You're doing it.
Look.
Maybe this was the mysterious Mr. Wright I'd been waiting my whole life to meet.
You remember Bridget?
Maybe not.
She used to run around your lawn with no clothes on, remember?
No, not as such.
What do you think?
I'm amazed.
That I'm devoting myself so generously to someone else?
No, that you found someone even more clueless than you are to worship you.
Baby, let me love you. Your
You're the resident Mr. Darcy. Come on. You're every girl's fantasy.
So I'm your fantasy?
You play your character very well.
Now listen to me carefully, girls, huh? It's very important to make a good first impression on Kolisov. Stand straight. Smile. Don't talk unnecessarily. And don't say anything too intelligent. You.
Shame she only selectively practices what she preaches.
No life without wife. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's William Darcy. I quite detest the man. So high and so conceited, I can't endure him.
Indeed. Wouldn't dance with him if he were... Mrs. Featherstone.
You're undead.
Oh, the squelch of a zombie murder. That is surely not something that Jane Austen imagined when she was penning the story of the Bennet sisters. And that final little grab came from last year's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, a box office flop. You also did hear scenes from Becoming Jane, the Jane Austen Book Club, Bridget Jones's Diary, Clueless, Austenland, and Bride and Prejudice. Tiffany, how did these, you know, wildly diverse adaptations and reimaginings, how did they relate to the making of Austen that was happening in the 19th century, do you think?
Well, I see them as a continuation. I think they've obviously reshaped the message that's going along with her. But to me, the ways that they seem similar is that the popular imagination has always turned to Austen and tried to find ways to make her part of a community. And the ways that in the early 20th century, elite men in men's clubs were claiming Austen as a conservative, apolitical woman who spoke to their needs, at the same time that suffragettes were outside in the streets of London marching through with banners with her name on them. Says to me that she was just been repurposed in these competing and conflicting ways. So even for people for whom the zombies seem anathema, you know, they can't imagine why anyone would put together Jane Austen and zombies. I think at the same time that that's happening, we see her in Christian dating guides. We see her in erotica. You know, she's just so endlessly repurposable, and there's a very long history to that.
But is there any meaning to those repurposings? I mean, is she just sort of like a bit of an, you know, a symbol, just 18th century lady in bonnets? We'll just call it Jane Austen, but it's got really nothing to do with the sort of fiction that she was writing?
Well, I'd like to think that there are some connections there. And I think this gets back to some of what you were talking about earlier in the program, that, you know, people can go to those texts and not be, and this was, I think Andrea Goldsmith was saying, you can go to the text and you're not told what to think. She talks about them as spaces of imagination in that interview you just played. And I think there's some truth to that, that Jane Austen does not write novels that tell us, here is how you need to behave, here is what you need to think. Certainly there are suggestions there, but it's done more with more nuance. And to me, that's why these novels and these stories and characters are so repurposable.
It's Books and Arts with you on RN. I'm Sarah Konoski, and Devaney Lose has just been talking to us about her most recent book called The Making of Jane Austen.